This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Welcome back into the program. Dustin Sweetelson here, live from Circa in downtown Las Vegas, where the book was buzzing, people. The Indiana Pacers gave us a little bit of life here. We all thought Oklahoma City was Thanos. They were inevitable. Turns out they got a fight on their hands. They're up against the Avengers. Avengers assemble right now. And right now, Tyrese Halliburton, despite not playing for Team USA much in the summer, he is Captain America. He is leading this team when it needs it the most. The Pacers, 5.5-point dogs, cash in the money line, plus 180 tonight. And the game stays under 116-107. Indiana is victorious. As I mentioned, this is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, YouTube TV, SiriusXM Channel 158, and the VSiN Watch app. Check us out however you want to tune into the program. Earlier today, there was a lot of baseball action that I'd like to run through here. See if there's anything we can take away, apply when it comes to Thursday's betting card. So early today, there was a lot of day baseball, getaway day across the league. The Reds and Guardians did battle, and one of them showed up to the fight, and that was Cleveland. Cleveland won 11-2. The game goes over the total of 8.5. Guardians cash minus 104, thanks to a grand slam from Carlos Santana. Man, that guy's been in the league forever, and he hits lefties. If you're on VSiN.com/picks earlier today, we had a plus 116 cash in this game. Jose Ramirez, over 2.5 hits, runs, and RBI. And he scored to go over that on the Santana Grand Slam. Logan Allen was really solid. 6 innings, 2 earned, 6 strikeouts. That pitching for Cleveland starting to turn a corner, where that's been the rock for the Guardians over the years, where they got off to a bit of a slow start. Maybe they'll get Bieber back down the road in the second half. They're going to be pesky down the stretch. They're going to contend for the wild card. They're never a sexy team. They're never a fun team. But they got a win today, 11-2, over the Cincinnati Reds. Real quick, the Marlins and Pirates. Pirates won 5-3. They take 2 of 3 from that series, coming off the sweep of Philadelphia. Now the Pirates have a bigger test in front of them. They're going to go and face the Houston Astros. We'll get into that 3-up, 3-down, where it's a step up in class in the fight when it comes to Pittsburgh coming up next. But a win nonetheless. As are the bats heating up for them, or do they just play bad competition? We'll find out more later. Phillies, speaking of, who got swept by Pittsburgh, they take care of business against the Cubs. They win 7-2 today. Game lands right on the total of 9. Philly was a minus 115 favorite. Chicago's now lost 3 of 4. Philly wins, but they've lost 6 of 8, so two teams that got off to really good starts. Scuffling of late. One, Kyle Schwarber, 21st home run of the season. That's something that we're going to discuss later in Dangerous or Donation regarding Kyle Schwarber and a future on him with the home run market. Jesus Luzardo, bounce back performance, 10 strikeouts, 1 earned run. The problem is 2 starts prior, I think he knocked himself out of the Cy Young picture. And then a lesson to be learned here. It was Ben Brown on the bump for Chicago. He's fade city. Look for team totals, first 5 team totals, maybe like really big power hitting left-handed bats against him going forward in the player prop market. Ben Brown's a guy that I am looking to go up against because he just doesn't give the Cubs a chance to win every 5th day. And that's where we stand there. It was the Braves 6, the Brewers 2. Braves were a heavy 192 favorite. 7.5 was the total, so we do just get over that. Atlanta's now won 2 of 3 after a 7-game skid. They were as high as 22-1 to win the NL East. Full disclosure, I made a mistake about 3 weeks ago. I bet them to win the East at like 5-1. I bet them to win the pennant. I bet them to win the World Series. I bet Ronald Acuna MVP at 80-1. He did hit his 6th homer of the year. Michael Harris is starting to heat up, hit his 5th home run of the year. But the story in this one was Spencer Schwellenbach. Complete game, 9 strikeouts, 2 earned. ERA's down to 3.11. I'm not sure if he can get back into the Cy Young picture. I'd love to see him do it because he's a guy that I know a lot of people had about 40-1 on before the season started. I'm looking now over at FanDuel. He's 50-1 right now. That's a big number on a young guy with a huge arm who's really figuring out how to pitch. Man, talking this through on the air, he's 50-1. Kodai Senga's 50-1. I mentioned Zach Wheeler, 12-1. I'm going to bet all of those, and I'm going to love the prices, and Paul Skenes is going to win the Cy Young Award. I envision it happening already, but Schwellenbach with a complete game today, 50-1 in the market if he can get go on a heater. A few years ago, I cashed Blake Snell, NL Cy Young, at 40-1 because I jumped in right at the beginning of a heater he was on. It carried all the way through the end of the season, and he ended up winning the thing. Now, that was the sweat to end all sweats. I mean, every time I turned on a Padres game, it was like two runners on that he walked in scoring position with two outs, and he'd reach back and get a bunch of key strikeouts to get out of the situation. It was basically every game like that. I think Schwellenbach is a way more efficient pitcher. 50-1 feels a little bit long there. Not an official play by any means, but I'm shocked by that number. Dodgers beat the Padres 5-2, speaking of the Padres. Game stays under the total of 9.5. Dodgers were minus 151. LA takes 2 of 3 from the series, but the Padres have now lost 5 of 8. And an interesting thing of note is Max Muncy went 2 for 3. I don't know if you guys realize this. Max Muncy was playing where he couldn't see the baseball for a while. Max Muncy, since wearing glasses, has been tearing the cover off the baseball. This is worth monitoring. And then you have to start to wonder, maybe some of these other guys who just stink and can't hit a baseball need to go get their eyes checked. We yell for umpires to do it from the stands all the time, but Max Muncy, since getting his eyes checked and realizing he needs to wear glasses, he's been tremendous. Blue Jays as a dog win plus 118 at the Cardinals, 5-2. Game goes under 8.5. The Mariners' struggles continue on the road. Arizona beats them 5-2 at home at Chase. Game stays under the 9. Arizona gets the sweep. They've won 7 of 10. And Brian Wu is a guy you can't bet on the road. 6 innings pitched, 5 earned runs. Just a brutal performance for Brian Wu. Suarez up to 19 home runs on the year. Super resurgent year for the right-handed bat at third base. And VSiN.com/picks, we had Donovan Solano to go over a half a hit at minus 109 today. He went 2 of 4. He got 2 hits. He hit a homer. And if I would have bet him to hit a homer, he would have went 0 for 4. I cannot hit a homer prop to save my life. But that is a big win for the Diamondbacks, who are right in the thick of things, man. If they played in another division, I'm curious what the record would be. The Angels and A's, let me get you the final score here because that was happening as I was driving over after doing the Mad Dog Show. Angels won 6-5. Game goes over 9.5. Angels were minus 149 favorites. But the story with this game is Joe Adell. Joe Adell hit his 13th home run. In 10 June games, Adell has 6 home runs, 10 ribbies, with an 1186 OPS. 6 homers in the month are tied for the lead. He is on a heater. He was a big prospect that I think some of us already labeled a bust. And it turns out he just wasn't ready. He's ready now. He has announced his presence with authority. And then I teased this going into the break. The Yankees beat up on Chris Bubik and the Royals tonight. Yankees were minus 132. They won 6-3. It goes over the 8.5. But the New York Yankees are becoming an auto fire against lefties. Last night against Cameron, they beat him up pretty good. Now, that's a rookie. Bubik's a guy who was in contention for the Cy Young. He leaves this game after 5 earned runs allowed against the Yankees with a 1.92 ERA. That lets you know everything about how good this guy had been locked in this season, and the Yankees just smashed him. 5 earned runs and 4 1/3 for him. If the Yankees are facing a lefty, even if it's a 5.5 team total, I'm looking to play overs. If you want to go first 5 over 2.5, sure, we can play that game. But Yankees against lefties, number 1 in OPS against southpaws, and right now, that offense is humming. Goldschmidt kills lefties. Volpe hits lefties well. And the Yankees, who would have thought the Yankees when they lost Garrett Cole? Everyone wrote them off. Well, they're not going to win the division. It's going to be Boston. It's going to be Baltimore. They are so far and away the class of the AL East. The Mets, and I'll talk about this a little bit with my next guest, Rob Brender, because he is a Mets fan. We once did a Mets podcast together. By once, I mean we did like 8 episodes, but it still counts. And the Mets beat the Nats 5-3 today. Mets were huge favorites, minus 279. But don't let Juan Soto get hot. 5th home run in 11 games for Soto, people. And guess what? He's having fun. Everyone was worried after that Yankee series. Guess what? Juan Soto is going to do Juan Soto things. You're going to look up at the end of the year. He's going to be around 300. He's going to have a million walks. He's going to be around 30 home runs with over 110 ribbies and over 100 runs scored. It may be boring to you to watch him take all those pitches, but it works. It produces results. His last 12 games, he's hitting .341 with 16 walks and just 6 strikeouts. Juan Soto is carrying this team. It's going to be awesome to watch the Mets play deep into October. Earlier today, the Orioles beat the Tigers. Did not see that happening with Casey Mize on the hill. The game goes over the total because Baltimore ends up dropping a 10 spot. They win 10-1. Total was set at 9. Eflin was good, 6 2/3, 5 hits and 5 strikeouts. Orioles are getting healthy. Westberg came back and homered today. I think that's important to note. They still need pitching. Maybe some of these guys who had Tommy John could return for them in the second half. They've dug themselves a big hole. But we've seen teams come out of similar holes before. Yeah, Orioles are a young team. They could get better. I'd love to see them make a deal with Seattle, though, and add one of those pitchers. That would be the ultimate move. If I'm Baltimore, I call up Jerry DePoto, and I go get one of those arms that they have, trade a couple of these young bats. That's what you have to do. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. We have a lot going on tonight. The Pacers making it a 2-1 NBA Finals, and we have the hockey tomorrow. More on that in a second. You want to take your betting to the next level? All you got to do is use our friends over at FirstBet. Sign up now at FirstBet.com. That's the number one, STBet.com. And use promo code VSiN200 to score a 20% rebate on all your wagers for the first 60 days up to $200. Don't miss out. Bet smarter today at FirstBet.com. I mentioned the hockey. We're going to discuss that next. My guy, Rob Render, you hear on all the NHL broadcasts, pre, half, post. I need to know. I want to bet the Oilers plus 130, but the body language was bad after game 3. Can Edmonton make this a series again, or are they dead men walking? Rob will help us explain that next on Cashing Out.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Welcome back into Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, hanging out live in downtown Las Vegas at the, I almost said the D, at Circa, at the Circa Sportsbook. Sundays I'm at the D when I hang out with Will Hill. And it's been a wild night in sports, in case you missed it. The NBA Finals is now 2-1. It's just not the team the market expected. The Indiana Pacers won at home today, 116-107. And all of a sudden, the NBA Finals has some juice. Now, the question is, does the Stanley Cup final still have juice? Because I have concerns. And to help us talk about all of that, my buddy Rob Render is going to join us now on the Progressive Guest Line. You know him from Sports USA on all the national radio broadcasts for the NHL, pre and post there, and on X at Robert Brender. Rob, thanks for doing this, man. Look, I've gotten into the hockey. You know I'm not really a hockey guy, but this year it's been exceptional. And through 2 games, I thought these teams were a coin flip. I thought they were totally evenly matched. And then game 3 happened. And I'm not sure how to evaluate that. Before we get into, do you believe Edmonton still has a fighting chance? Let me give you the market where it stands. Right now, the Panthers are a minus 260 favorite. Edmonton's plus 215, meaning you have to lay $260 to win $100 on Florida. And as far as game 4 goes, Panthers are a big favorite at minus 148, plus $1.24 on Edmonton. The total is 6.5, but the market's indicating juice on the under, expecting that this won't be as high scoring. Do you believe the Edmonton Oilers still have a chance in this series? Because the body language has me concerned from the other night, Rob.
And I can understand that perspective. And by the way, loving the jacket. I told you this during the break, but the folks need to know how much I appreciate that so much. That look. Fantastic. Great for you. And really nice for me to get to stare at it this entire time. Look, I completely understand why you would think that. But look no further, my friend, than what we saw in the Stanley Cup final last year. These two teams, of course, meeting back-to-back years in the Cup final. If you remember, last year, the Panthers had a 3-0 lead. They were on the road at Edmonton trying to close out the series in a sweep. What happens? They lost game 4, 8-1. And people were saying, whoa, what happened here? Is there some kind of weird role reversal? Was it bad body language? Did they just want to win at home? Nobody knew. And then all of a sudden, what happened from there? Well, the Oilers went on to win the next 2 games, ultimately forcing game 7, which we know was an epic and ultimately was won by the Florida Panthers. So what I'm telling you is there could be the possibility that this was really just a one-off. And that's the way that I'm looking at this at the moment. The first 2 games were so hotly contested. They were so great. It was epic. And I don't think that's a stretch to say that. Legitimately epic Stanley Cup final action for those first couple of games. An overtime decision and then a double overtime decision. And so I think it's an aberration, what we saw in game three. And we're going to find out very quickly in game four when they get on the ice tomorrow night. So don't get too down on the Oilers just yet. Now, here's the caveat. I'm going to throw this out there for you. The goaltending is a concern. We all wonder about Stuart Skinner in net for Edmonton. That's been a big question mark for them for the last several years. Can they finally find a goaltender? Skinner proved that he could take them as far as Game 7 of the Stanley Cup final a year ago. So when he's on a heater, that's probably good enough to win a championship. He looked so bad in that last game that there's the possibility he doesn't even start Game 4 for them. Could be Calvin Pickard back in net. And when you start kind of messing with that goaltending situation, that would concern me the most.
Yeah, you're in a tough spot, right? If you're Chris Knobloch and you have to make that change at goalie, if you go away from Skinner and Pickard lets in a couple goals early, it's like you can't go back to Skinner. You've committed to Pickard. Skinner has no confidence at all now, so you can't throw him back out there. But there is also an element, Rob, where Stuart Skinner seems to do his best work in games 4 through 7 in these series. Explain that one to me, how a guy can look so lost and so awesome in the clutch at times. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, he is not an elite goaltender. And that is no slight on Stuart Skinner, because he's a very good goaltender. And as I say, he's good enough to take them to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup final. He showed that a year ago. And to get them to this spot this year, he has been excellent. The team around him has really helped him along the way, though. He has done his fair share. Again, no slight on him. But the system around him, their puck possession statistics, which suggest that they're doing a very good job when they win of making sure that the other team doesn't get the opportunities and the high danger scoring chances. But he's doing enough to get them to this spot. So why he's been great in the clutch spots may not just be a reflection of how good he's been, but maybe the team around him in those spots. When you have a Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and all the star level talent, Bouchards of the world on that roster, they step it up in clutch time as much as Stuart Skinner steps it up in clutch time. And so I think it's really a team that gets through those big moments. But to your point, when you said that if you go away from him, could you go back to him? They've done it. They did it in this playoff system. As a matter of fact, when you look at the first round, he was awful in those first couple of games against the Kings. He loses the starting job. They go to Calvin Pickard. Now, I know it's not an in-game switch, but when they went back to Skinner later on, when Pickard got hurt in the second round, Skinner then took over and was great. So he's shown that he can be benched and get the starting job back and be good enough.
Rob Brender's with us on the Progressive Guest Line. You hear him on the pre and post when it comes to the Sports USA broadcast of the Stanley Cup Final, which you can hear, of course, on SiriusXM and at Robert Brender over on X. But Rob, my question about Edmonton is it feels like Florida's in their head, which is something the Panthers like to do. How does Edmonton psych themselves up where they're not playing Florida's game? Because as little hockey as I've watched, my one takeaway with the Panthers, that's one of the deepest teams I've seen in any sport this year. They are loaded and they can beat you every which way. What are your biggest takeaways from Florida so far?
Yeah, well, they're built for this year, and they have said it since the postseason began that, and it's the one thing that we kind of all thought anyway, that the regular season was just one of those things they were sleepwalking through. They've been to the Cup final each of the last 2 years. They knew they were going to be good enough to get in the playoffs no matter how well they really played during the regular season, and they had some injuries mixed in too, so that took away from some of the point totals as well. But ultimately, they knew they were going to get back to the spot where they would have a chance to challenge for the Cup again. And so forget the regular season numbers. This time of year, when you have, to your point, as much depth as they have, top to bottom on their roster, their third line with Brad Marchand and Lundell and Etu Lehtinen are scoring at an incredibly high level. Marchand has been one of the great stories in these Cup finals at 37 years old. It's really incredible how he's melded into that group so seamlessly. Their fourth line, even though they don't score a ton, have really done a great job. Greer and Gajewicz and Nosek of being that hard checking line. And we know how great those top couple of lines can be. Sam Bennett's having a ridiculous playoff year with the 14 goals, and they haven't really gotten anything out of their captain, Sasha Barkov, and very little out of Sam Reinhart. He had a goal and an assist in game 3, but it was a blowout game.
Everyone did.
So their top guys haven't really done it yet. And still, they're in this position where they lead 2-1. So yes, they're built for this time of year. They added some big time pieces, Marchand being one of those, Seth Jones being the other major addition before the trade deadline. And both of them have been tremendous additions. The goaltending is great. The defense is spectacular. Special teams, which was a little bit slow at home, finally picked that up. So they're scoring on the power play. Their defense, especially when they're shorthanded, has been great. They can do it all. And are they in Edmonton's head? I don't know. I mean, again, it's a 2-1 series. I agree with you, though, that Edmonton needs to do a better job of not trying to play the Panthers game. All that rough stuff, that's not really Edmonton. And they'll try to tell you, yeah, well, we have big, strong guys too. But they're playing the Panthers game at that point. You don't want to get involved in that. Play your game. And that's certainly one of the keys, I think, for Edmonton in game four.
Progressive Guest Line brings you Rob Brender, Sports USA host, pre and post on the Stanley Cup Final broadcast. You hear him, of course, on SiriusXM. And you mentioned Sam Bennett. I mean, 4 goals in this series through 3 games. He's having an awesome postseason. He's the favorite for the Conn Smythe, plus 105. But part of me thinks we're going to be kicking ourselves if we don't have a little bit of Connor McDavid at plus 240 or Leon Draisaitl at 13-1, because that's a better price than if you were to bet the Oilers to win the whole thing right now. Or could I maybe convince you that Sergei Bobrovsky, with all the shots he's stopping, is flying under the radar? If I was going to throw those names at you other than Bennett to win Conn Smythe, who would be next up in the pecking order for you?
100% McDavid. 100%, because I'm not counting out the Oilers yet. And yeah, you know that the point total, it's already ridiculous. He leads the league in points in the postseason, although Draisaitl's right behind him. So I guess if you want to say I'll maybe throw a bet in on Draisaitl, probably a longer odd guy. But McDavid would be the guy. Yeah, I think he'll take over here these next couple of games. And that's the thing about Edmonton in general. Forget even the betting angle of this, that when you're thinking about how are they going to get back in this series and win this series, you go no further than they have the best player on the planet. And if he says, I am going to take over, I will not let us lose, I wouldn't bet against him. Yeah. Certainly not at this point. So that would be my bet.
Yeah, I think we're all going to be kicking ourselves for counting out Edmonton when Connor McDavid takes over. I watched him in game 1, break someone's ankles like it was And One mixtape 2001, coming home from school, the professor.
Yeah, okay, so about that. Not only did he break someone's ankles, he broke the ankles of one of the best defensive forwards in the game. The guy that just won the Selke Award for the best two-way forward in the game, in Sasha Barkov. And then, oh, by the way, he's got this 6'4" defenseman behind him, and Aaron Ekblad, who's been an 11-year, 12-year veteran in the league. He got around him to make an incredible sauce for Bastard Draisaitl. It was ridiculous. I asked Eddie Olczyk, Dustin, real quick about that play, and Eddie O said it's one of the best plays he's seen in years.
Well, you're one of the best when it comes to pre and post. We'll catch you on Sports USA on those broadcasts. 3 Up, 3 Down is next.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're cruising along here. It is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Dustin Sweetelson here, hanging out at Circa in downtown Las Vegas, where this place was packed. It was crazy, and everyone was into it behind me. And hopefully they cashed on some tickets at Indiana +5.5. And like me, took a little sprinkle on that money line at +$1.80, because the Pacers made it a 2-1 NBA Finals tonight. A strong victory over the visiting Oklahoma City Thunder, 116-107. The game does stay under the total of 226. Indiana, as 5.5-point dogs, wins outright. But most importantly here, they give us life. They're lengthening this series. They're making it interesting. Believe me, when all I'm giving you is Major League Baseball about 3 weeks from now, you're going to miss the NBA. Trust me about that. You're praying for training camps. We can only do the over-under win totals on the NFL team so much. So enjoy the basketball while we have it. That's my thing here. I know I'm speaking to an audience that bets, so you're locked in, you're watching, but I'm sure you know people that aren't, because the TV ratings are down. You have to know people who aren't watching. And this series is actually good. We had a classic in game 1 with an Indiana comeback. Tonight was a very good, if not great, game up until the final few minutes where Indiana pulled away at home. And I expect Oklahoma City to answer back, and the market expects Oklahoma City to answer back. Friday, game 4, Thunder are 6-point favorites, totals 225.5. So we keep coming down on that total. I'd like the under there. I think the Thunder slowed things up. We could see Hartenstein back in the starting lineup. And from a futures perspective, looking at the series price, right now, Oklahoma City's -230. Indiana's +190. The series began with the Pacers $4 to win, and then Oklahoma City, they were minus 750. We're now down to minus 230. We have life, we have juice, and I'm pumped up to be watching the NBA Finals. This has the potential to be a classic, but if a tree falls in the forest and no one's there, did it really fall? Do we know that it happened? Because that's the problem right now with these TV ratings and the NBA Finals. It's cashing out VSiN, the sports betting network. You want information when it comes to Major League Baseball, you got to go to VSiN.com. Adam Burke with the daily articles every single day. He is the sharpest person out there when it comes to betting baseball. We have a bunch of other great people who also contribute. Greg Peterson, who you heard on with Scott Seidenberg earlier, who is also doing cashing out a few nights a week as well. They handicap it and they give you great betting angles. I'm trying to add to those angles here with a little segment we like to call Three Up, Three Down. It's really simple. Who's hot? Who's not coming into tomorrow's games? Let's begin with the Houston Astros, where they're going to send their ace to the bump in Framber Valdez, hosting the Chicago White Sox. And the market makes it tough to bet on the game if you want to bet the side when it comes to Houston, because the Astros are minus 261 favorites, plus 207 the other side with Davis Martin and the White Sox. Total is 7.5. And that's because Framber Valdez is taking the hill. Framber Valdez, he is a throwback, man. He works deep into games. He is consistent, tried and true. As long as he's not injured, which really last year was the only year he dealt with a bunch of injuries, he's as solid as they come in Major League Baseball. Let's take a look at what he's done over his last five starts. 37 innings pitched, 5 quality starts, a sub-2 ERA with 40 punchouts and a .89 whip. He's going to go up against the Chicago White Sox lineup that is a little peskier than I anticipated, and I think most anticipated them being. They have a few guys who see the ball well off him and a few that have good numbers against lefties. But overall, Framber's a guy I'd look to back. The props are not out right now. I'd look at total outs recorded if we get him into the sixth, if it's not heavily juiced. Feels like that's where he should be. But that's where we stand with the number one guy going tomorrow for Houston in Framber Valdez. Another three-up pitcher is Jameson Taillon. Man, Jameson Taillon's really figured some things out. There was a few years ago, I thought he was ready to be out of baseball. Over his last five starts for the Cubs, who tomorrow Chicago is minus 208 favorites, plus $1.60 the other way, $1.68 the other way with Pittsburgh, 7.5 the total. Taillon over his last five, 32 2/3 innings pitched, 5 quality starts, a 2.20 ERA, 23 strikeouts, a .73 whip. Right now, his K prop set for 4.5 tomorrow. 4.5 also on the hits. Earned runs over under 1.5. Facing a Pittsburgh offense that their confidence is high coming off the Miami series. They swept Philly before that. And while I love Jameson Taillon right now and what he's doing, he doesn't miss a lot of bats. So I'm looking for an angle to back him. I'm thinking going the under 4.5 hits market just because the Pirates offense I don't totally trust. That would be my lean when it comes to Taillon tomorrow as part of three up, three down. And then the third pitcher as part of three up, Sanga Gang, Kodai Sanga for the New York Mets. They'll wrap up their series looking for the sweep with the Washington Nationals. Early game tomorrow, 1:10 local time on the East Coast. The Mets are minus 251 favorites over at DraftKings. Plus 201 when it comes to Mike Soroka and the Nats. Total is at 8. And Sanga over his last five has been tremendous. 29 1/3, 3 quality starts, a 2.15 ERA, 30 strikeouts, 1.19 whip. K prop set at 5.5, but juiced minus 145. I still think that's playable there. You want to chase plus money. You want to get greedy. I wouldn't fault you for going over 6.5, but I think the Nats offense is a little bit better than people think. I would just lay the heavy juice and go over 5.5. His outs recorded is juiced at minus 170 at 17.5, so you can't bet that. Hits allowed 4.5. That might be playable on the under. 1.5 earned runs. He might allow one or two here or there, so I'd stay away there. If I was going to bet anything on Sanga against this Nats lineup, I'd look at that K prop. I'd go over 5.5 at minus 145. It's cashing out. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Dustin Sweetelson here. Looking at Thursday's Major League Baseball card with three up, three down. We gave you the positive side of things. Here's the negative. But what the negative does, it gives us the opportunities to back offenses facing them. And the first guy up is Fade City every time he takes the hill, and that is Colorado's Antonio Senzatella. Tomorrow, you've got the Rockies hosting the Giants, plus 178 on Colorado, minus 220 on Birdsong and the visiting San Francisco Giants. Totals at 11. And Senzatella over his last five has been atrocious. 8.22 ERA over 23 innings, just 14 strikeouts, a 2.04 whip. The ball is jumping in Denver. It's not an official play, but I would not fault you for going San Francisco team total over 6.5 at minus 110. Senzatella is a guy who just gives up a ton of contact. The ball is flying. And I do expect San Francisco to not just win, and the market obviously says that, but I expect San Francisco to put up a ton of runs on the road in Colorado. Our next pitcher as part of three down is Seth Lugo. Seth Lugo has made just two starts off the IL. So I want to be clear about that because it's difficult to say he's been bad, but he's not been Seth Lugo-like. That's the problem. Over his first two starts off the IL, just 8 1/3 innings pitched, and one of them included 5 innings, 2 earned runs allowed at the White Sox on Friday. Prior to that, it was 3 1/3, didn't make it out of the fourth with 4 earned runs against Detroit. Detroit's a good offense, don't get me wrong, but he's allowed 10 hits in his last 8 1/3 innings. That's not good for a guy who's usually going to get racking up a few strikeouts here and there. He's not exactly a power pitcher. He relies on that curveball. But I have some concerns about Seth Lugo where he's at based on his two starts since coming off the IL. He's facing the Yankees. Well, let me get you the pricing here. Yankees are minus 150 favorites, plus 123 on Kansas City. The total is 9. And the total's where I'm going to look in this game because the other pitcher as part of three down would be Yankees starter Will Warren. You know, Will Warren got off to a pretty solid start to the year. You're like, all right, he's a serviceable starting pitching option for the Yankees. But over his last five, he has no quality starts. He's pitched 21 1/3 innings, and he has a 6.33 ERA. He does get the occasional strikeout, though. Good strikeout numbers, good power numbers. A 1.50 whip is not going to get it down. And I think about the Kansas City team total in this one at over 3.5, minus 133 juice. Or I do like the Yankees, who a bunch of them we'll get into in mano a mano later, have really good numbers against Lugo at 4.5. So let's just combine it. Let's go game total over 9. Official play in Yankees and Royals tomorrow because I think both pitchers are susceptible here based on the matchup, based on where they're trending right now. And I expect a lot of runs because no one's stopping the Yankees offense at this point. The Yankees offense cannot stop scoring, cannot stop hitting. They've mashed two lefties to start this series. They're going to bang up a righty in Seth Lugo tomorrow. The play is over 9 in the game. And if you want to see the money, where the money's going in that game and every other game on the betting board, whether it's the NBA Finals, NHL, or Major League Baseball, you check out the VSiN.com betting splits. Unlike other sources, our betting splits come straight from Circa and DraftKings Sportsbook, giving you insight into where the sharp action is landing. Circa is known for taking big bets from pro bettors, while DraftKings gives you a broader national perspective on the market, which means you're getting the real action, not just public money, but the kind of wagers that actually move the lines. See the percentage of bets versus percentage of handle in every game across every major sport, helping you make smarter, more informed bets. Get the VSiN betting splits, which are exclusive to us, for as little as $9.99 for your first month over at VSiN.com/subscribe. We also do a great job with our golf content. Long Shots, the golf betting podcast, Kelly Bidlin, Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, all over it. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, the U.S. Open preview. We'll touch on that next as my guy Spencer Aguiar joins me. Who does he think is a value play on a course that looks like it's going to be tough sledding? All of that, a U.S. Open tour coming up next. It's Cashing Out, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Boom! Back at it again. It's Cashing Out. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Dustin Sweetelson here, taking you through the night action. Appreciate you making us a part of your night, wherever you may be, however you may be tuning in. You've got SiriusXM Channel 158. You can watch us on YouTube TV. And all of that and more available at your fingertips with the VSiN Watch app. Download it, whether you have iPhone, Android, whichever device you have. We've got the VSiN Watch app there available for you to take us on the go, wherever you go. As I mentioned, it's been a crazy night in sports. The Pacers, in case you missed it, took a 2-1 series lead in the NBA Finals. Big win over the Thunder, 116-107. Coming up in about 30 minutes, Wes Reynolds will join me live from Indianapolis after attending the game. We hope he still has a voice, and we hope he has U.S. Open picks. And I know he does because I read them today at VSiN.com. They're tremendous. And another guy who I love getting U.S. Open picks and golf picks from in general is my buddy Spencer Aguiar. He joins me now on the Progressive Guest Line. You know his work from over at Roto Baller, and check him out on Twitter, at TOffSports, where he's tweeting out great nuggets left and right. Spencer, thanks for doing this, man. And you know what it means when it's the U.S. Open? It means a challenging golf course. And I got a view of what Oakmont Country Club in Pennsylvania looks like today on a video, and I was waiting for an ocean to pop up. I saw so much sand. Tell me about the course. I know it's fast greens. It's super challenging. More bunkers than I've ever seen. And it's actually longer than it was last time we were there in 2016. But what does this course mean from a betting perspective? Does it mean we play it safer, or does it mean we look for some more long shots coming up in the U.S. Open?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question and a good place to start. Like, not all major championship tracks. And when I came in and I talked to you at the PGA Championship, I didn't necessarily love the course they were using there. But when you look at Oakmont here, this is U.S. Open golf through and through. It was established over 120 years ago. When we look at the last two iterations of it in 2007 and 2016, you talked about it being even longer during this go around. It produced a 4.63 total per round. That is the most demanding course of a return that we've gotten over the last 25 years that we've seen in action. You talked about it, Dustin. Like, one of the most famous hazards that you're going to have are these church pew bunkers. Those are present on the third and fourth holes. Golfers can really find all sorts of issues in that area. And then it gives you a real taste of the entire landscape. There's 175 plus bunkers that you were talking about. There's 5-inch thick rough that's accompanying the venue at all turns. And then there's these diabolically quick greens that present millions of issues that come into play. And when I built my model this week, one of the things that I was trying to figure out of how did I want to go into this process. You hear some people, they're going to say U.S. Open, you want distance. Some people are going to say you need accuracy because of the 5-inch thick rough. I took a little bit of a different approach with this. I kind of asked this and or question with this. And what I mean by that is, like, the first question was, are you long and straight? That's always going to be the best blueprint if you want to win this event. But the other question that I wanted to ask and I wanted my model to find is, are you long or accurate? Because as long as you had one of those two profiles within your game, I think I'm perfectly fine keeping all of those golfers under consideration. Didn't necessarily want to weigh things too far in either one of those directions. But what ends up happening if you're neither one of those two things, because of the quick greens and all the problems and the bunkers that come into play, when everybody else is going to be putting to save par from, let's say, 5 to 8 feet, those players that are not long enough and not accurate enough, they're now putting to save bogey, double bogey in these spots. So, you know, scrambling is one of those key statistics that you're going to really have to highlight this week. And it did give me a much stranger return in my model than I was expecting to see in a couple different spots.
Yeah, let's talk about the model, because you mentioned strange results in the model. What jumped out and what does that mean for who you're backing and at what price when it comes to the Open?
So I did a show for the Olympics last year, and I'm going to make a very similar argument to the one that I'm going to bring up here. Unfortunately, when we look at that Olympics tournament, Scottie Scheffler won the gold medal at 3-1. This didn't necessarily come to fruition with the conversation that I had, but what I talked about was I thought Jon Rahm was the forgotten star of that field. You could grab him at 16-1, talked about Scottie being 3-1 in that tournament. Xander and Rory were 7-1 options. And at the end of the day, a loss is a loss. But if you go back and you remember that Olympic challenge that was put into play, Rahm had that medal all but around his neck heading into the back nine there. And I think a lot of that sentiment of why my model like Jon Rahm holds true here for the U.S. Open, we seem to have fallen into this territory. And in this Open in that 14-16-1 range again, it's been bet down. You're probably not going to find better than 12-1 at this point. But one of the things that I noticed in my model is Bryson DeChambeau, and rightfully so. Like, this is not an anti-Bryson take here. My model likes Bryson also. He's the third favorite for me on this board. But Bryson is the name that has consistently put himself into contention to win almost every single major outside of last year's Open Championship. And for that reason, name like Rom has been pushed a little bit further down the board in a lot of these spots. But I think if you look at the success that he's been having, the current form, you mix all of those together, I was very surprised to see Rom have the second highest win equity return for me that I had. And a lot of that's going to come down to, can he return to the high-end marks that his driver used to return? You look at the 2021 U.S. Open when he won at Torrey Pines. He was the number one projected driver for me in that tournament. And unfortunately, that's not going to necessarily be something that you get if you're just purely pulling in numbers, because LIV doesn't have the best stats to pull from. And if you're just using major championship success, it's been a little bit hit and miss with him. But one of the arguments that I always make about any of these outrights is volatility is a good thing. We want that high-end potential. The floor being lower is fine for an outright bet. We're trying to hit a winner here. So Rom being the second win equity candidate in my model was enough for me to punch that ticket at 14-1. I still think it's okay at 12-1. And the other name that I would at least throw into there, if you want to find another LIV golfer that kind of fits a similar viewpoint of that overlooked commodity, would be Joaquin Niemann when he opened up at 35-1. I feel like, Dustin, when I went on and I talked to you probably the last two majors, I talked about Niemann. That was the name that I kept dropping to you and Patrick when I was having conversations. And I'm under this belief with Niemann, and I'll keep this very short with him, but I'm under this belief that if he had not left for LIV, we're probably looking at Niemann in this light of how we view Xander Schauffele before he had won one of his first two majors last year. Instead, we get this very lazy narrative that always comes into play with him, where he doesn't win when it matters most. There's no major championship success. I understand he has a top 10 at the PGA Championship during the last go around. Everybody's going to say he backdoored that tournament, but results are meant to grow over time. And if we believe that to be true and the numbers hold steady the way that they do in my model, I can make a really strong argument that Niemann's a top 5 win equity return for this tournament. And so that was the very first ticket, if we're being technical here, that I punched this week.
Spencer Aguiar on the Progressive guest line, rotoballer.com, senior PGA analyst, Better Golf Podcast at Tee Off Sports over on X. Only have about 90 seconds to 2 minutes here, Spencer. What's your favorite matchup to play for the U.S. Open?
I like the idea of fading some of the past champions. So names like Justin Rose and Gary Woodland were two options I was looking to take on. You know, there's different iterations out there if you're looking to shop around, but I thought those were two good ways to look at. Just to throw out a made cut sort of a prop, I like Chris Goddard at plus 120 to make the cut. I thought that was value at the number. He was the most mispriced player that I had on the board. And then just to throw out one more outright very quickly, I'll keep this short, Dustin, but you know, we were talking about this before we went on air, and you even asked the question at the very beginning. When you're looking at this tournament, does the volatility of the course reward the high-end golfers, or does it reward the names that are a little bit deeper down the board? And I was fortunate enough to hit Wyndham Clark 2 years ago at 100-1. And one of the things I noticed at the US Open is of the last 16 iterations of this tournament, a little under 50% of those people that have won have made that tournament their only major championship win in their career. It's still counting. Some of those names could add to the mix. There is a lot of options in this tournament that fit that criteria. Daniel Berger, Robert McIntyre, Taylor Pendrith, Maverick McNealy. The one I'm going to give out on this show that I backed, Harris English. You look at what he's done at these U.S. Open tests in the past, 3 top 8 finishes in his last 5 attempts, and the statistical profile really liked him inside of my model. My model's not usually one that backs Harris English, so I found that to be interesting. We're talking about another interesting caveat of my model being higher on a player than the market seems to be.
He's Spencer Aguiar, rotoballer.com, where you could read his work at Tee Off Sports on X. Thanks for doing this, man. We'll talk again very, very soon. Tremendous as always.
It's always a pleasure, Dustin. Thank you so much.
You know what else is tremendous? This special at Circa. I don't know why they're doing this. They're giving you everything. For just $400, you can come to Circa in Las Vegas for the ultimate getaway package, a 2-night stay here at Circa, $100 in dining credit, $100 in beverage credit, plus a day bed at Stadium Swim for $400, resort fees and taxes included, limited time offer through September 4th. Head to CircaLasVegas.com for the information. We're going to break down Thursday's MLB card next on Cashing Out.